mad. They say murder three. Strange things did happen here. No stranger would it be if we met up at midnight in the hanging tree. Are you coming?
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Stereo Media Radio Network. Always remember, you can hear us crystal clear with one touch text and call if you go get that Civic Media app for free from your favorite app stores. Got a lot of stuff to get through today, but I got to share. I'm so excited because I'm a huge foodie, big food nerd. I am a fan of all kinds of different cuisines, and I'm very proud of what we have here in the Midwest. We really have some impressive chefs, great restaurants. I think we compete with any major metropolitan area. And one of Milwaukee's own chef owners has been nominated as James Beard's National Best Chef. That is quite a nomination to get the national nod, not just Midwest Best Chef, but James Beard's National Best Chef Award. That gentleman's name is Greg Leon. He is the chef and owner, operator of Amelinda Restaurant here in Milwaukee. He is going to be joining me this Thursday. You're not going to want to miss that interview. So many exciting things going on in the Milwaukee and Wisconsin food scene. It'll be wonderful to celebrate the nomination with Greg and to talk all things Wisconsin food. So mark your calendars. That's going to be coming up on Thursday. Next Monday, I'm going to be joined by City of Milwaukee Comptroller candidate Bill Christensen. My good friend Aicha Sawa spent one term as Milwaukee's elected comptroller, decided not to seek a second term, and Bill Christensen from her office has declared his candidacy. So we'll have a nice talk with Bill next Monday. But let's get into the stuff. I've spent a lot of time on my show talking about the Supreme Court's shadow docket and the incredible, almost unchecked power grab that the conservatives on the Supreme Court have engaged in. The shadow docket is often where a case has not been heard fully on its merits yet, but there is some sort of interim relief, a request for an injunction stopping something from happening that the court will decide, basically, and frequently will not tell anybody how the vote came down or what their rationales are. And interestingly enough, both of our topics today touch upon this. So I think this is a through line for my show. And again, I think we're going to see these concepts coming up time and time again this election year. And I cannot emphasize the importance of everybody starting to get our heads around how powerful the Supreme Court has become. So the two things we're going to be talking about today are an execution that occurred just this past Thursday in Alabama. And I'm very interested to hear what you Civic Media listeners think about the death penalty here in the United States. It's been such a hot topic of debate for so very, very long, and rightly so. I think, you know, people can have differing views on it. I'd like to hear what you think about it. 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. And I think it's interesting to sort of, you can always talk about the death penalty in isolation as a concept. But what happened this past Thursday in Alabama was an execution that was carried out using a method that has never been used in the United States before. And this method caused the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, a guy by the name of Volker Turk, to say this, quote, I have serious concerns that this novel, untested method amounts to torture, end quote. Officials from the European Union called it a particularly cruel and unusual punishment. The White House called the method very troubling. And what's really interesting about this is not just that it was an untested method. In other words, that the guy that Alabama executed on Thursday was effectively used as a human guinea pig. That's not the only completely shocking thing about this particular case. The other thing that's totally shocking is that when he was convicted of murder back in 1996, the jury decided not to sentence the man to death. And instead, under the law of Alabama at the time, the judge decided, no, my viewpoint is better than 12 citizens. And he changed the punishment from life imprisonment to a death sentence. So that's shocking. And then this. The state of Alabama tried to kill this guy once before in 2022, and the execution was botched. They tried to kill him by lethal injection, and he survived that. So I want like all of us to pull all these things together. He's being used as a human guinea pig. A jury of his peers, when he was convicted, did not sentence him to death. One judge decided to wipe their judgment off the books and put his own personal judgment into play. And they tried to kill him once already and botched that execution. Just think about that. So let me tell you a little bit about this guy that's been executed and the method. His name's Kenneth Smith. It was a very, very complex sort of weird tale of murder for hire that he was ultimately convicted of killing a woman. He claims he had nothing to do with the actual execution. He was aware of it. Murder that he was convicted of. But really sort of complex plot. In other words, he denied actually carrying out the killing. His co-conspirator was executed, I believe, 2 years ago. And now to the method that Alabama guinea pigged, tried out, tested on Mr. Smith. Basically, they suffocated the man to death. And they did that by using nitrogen gas. They put a mask over his face that they hadn't previously fit to his face to determine if it was going to seal on there well. And they just pumped pure nitrogen into the mask, which deprives the brain of oxygen and results in death. I ask you, does that sound cruel and unusual? And here are what some of the media accounts of his execution. These are some of the things that the words that were used to describe his execution. It took 22 minutes. He was conscious for several minutes after the nitrogen gas began to flow. He then began to, quote, shake and writhe, strapped to the gurney, pulling against the restraints of his gurney for more than 2 minutes. The BBC said that he thrashed violently. I just think this is nuts. And the Supreme Court declined to stop the execution. The court's three liberal justices actually publicly dissented on the shadow docket. So they wanted their objection or the fact that they would have stayed the execution to be public. Mr. Smith's faith advisor, a guy by the name Reverend Jeff Hood, said to the Daily Beast that Kenny was terrified. He's been terrified that this thing was going to completely torture him. Again, it seems like it did. In 2022 alone, the state of Alabama had three executions that were deemed botches, meaning they deviated from the stated protocol. Other states have struggled to obtain the drugs needed for lethal injections in the face of pressure from medical groups and activists who oppose the death penalty. And while Smith's lawyers never contested that this was going to kill him, what they argued was that the use of the mask was potentially not a close enough seal, and that the fact that it wasn't sealed to his face could result in prolonging the execution process, effectively torturing him. This is one of those things that it's like, I'm sorry, if we're going to kill somebody, can't we do it better? If this is the only remaining method to execute someone, should we be in the business of executing people anymore? It bothers me. Here's what Justice Sotomayor had to say. Alabama plans to execute Kenneth Eugene Smith tonight by nitrogen hypoxia. The method is untested. Smith is the first person in this country ever to be executed this way. The details are hazy because Alabama released its heavily redacted execution protocol under 5 months ago. What Smith knows is that he will be strapped to a gurney. He will wear a nitrogen supplying off the rack mask for which the state has not fitted him or even tried on him. Once the nitrogen is flowing into the mask, his executioners will not intervene and will not remove the mask, even if Smith vomits into it and chokes on his own vomit. I would grant the petition for a writ of certiorari and summarily reverse the 11th Circuit's order affirming the denial of Smith's preliminary injunction. Twice now, this court has ignored Smith's warning that Alabama will subject him to an unconstitutional risk of pain. The first time, Smith's prediction came true. He survived to describe the intense fear and pain he experienced during Alabama's first tortuous attempts to execute him. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on Pacific Media Radio Network. Call me and tell me what you think about that. 467-2789.
Are you?
Summer has come and passed. The innocent can never last. Wake me up when September ends. Like my father's come to pass. 7 years has gone so fast. Wake me up when September ends. Here comes the rain again, falling from the stars.
Maggie, you are muted.
I'm Maggie Dawn. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us. We're talking about the death penalty on Monday. You know, just a little light Monday discussion. 844-967-2789. I'm just, as a lawyer and a human being, I can't believe we just asphyxiated someone to death. I mean, isn't that at least some people's worst way that they can think of to die, or one of our collective fears, is our inability to breathe? The media accounts of his execution are just shocking. I think we've got to be able to do better. And now here's the kicker. So I was telling you all the absolutely horrifying sort of weirdness about this guy's execution. He's a human guinea pig. Nitrogen gas hypoxia being used. Test untested human guinea pig. Sure, let's give it a whirl. The protocols for how it was going to, Alabama was going to do this, only out for a few months. The jury of his peers didn't sentence him to death. One judge just decided to wipe their opinion off and nope, I think this guy should die. And they tried to kill him once already and failed. That's bananas to me. And then here is this last absolutely unbelievable fact. I don't care where you come down on the death penalty. This should be concerning to all of us. Apparently, the whole idea for this nitrogen gas hypoxia was the product of a report, sort of white paper written by a law professor. So, like, not a doctor, doesn't understand how hypoxia works, doesn't understand what nitrogen does to the brain and the body. This is what Karina Barrett Lane, a law professor at the University of Richmond, said. She confirmed that this is where this idea came from. This is also written about in a Scientific American article from September 22, 2022. The entire proposal for nitrogen gas was the product of a 14-page report made by a criminal justice professor. He's not a doctor, he doesn't have any medical training, and he's not a scientist. But he knew one of the legislators in Alabama that eventually adopted this. Again, the reason why oftentimes they can't get the drugs for the lethal injection is that medical suppliers don't want to provide the drug. I think I can understand why. Jim from Wales, what do you think about all this?
You know, it's one of those things that, what is a final deterrent for people? For, you know, creating, you know, murder, whatever, you know, the punishment is. What about the electric chair? You know, that was considered cruel and unusual also.
I think it is, right? I don't think I would want to see someone executed by an electric chair. It seems sort of obviously cruel and unusual to me. What do you think, Jim? Electric chair okay? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Oh, What about the innocent people that were murdered or whatever else happened to them? You know, was it a swift killing that this person did to them? Or
yeah.
Where do you stop taking a look at the feelings for the people that did the crime and say they shouldn't have done the crime because, you know, here your punishment is?
Yeah, I think what you're talking about, Jim, these are the two, at least by my recollection and reading, the two most frequently cited reasons for the death penalty: deterrence and effectively retribution. The interesting thing about deterrence is that virtually every study, every bit of research that was done about the question of does the death penalty actually deter these sorts of horrendous crimes, right? It's a death penalty only used for the worst sorts of crimes. And it's has no deterrent effect. And that's for a few reasons. One is we don't kill people quickly. They have extensive appeal rights. We could talk about whether or not that makes sense. But oftentimes the reason why people commit these sorts of heinous crimes, it's not rational. Deterrence works if somebody's actually, you know, going through some kind of calculation. So I hear you. I think when we cite deterrence, it's important to see and ask ourselves, does it actually work to deter people from committing these kinds of crimes? The second thing you brought up was the retribution and the justice for victims. And I think that that's the most challenging question of all. I myself am a victim of a very violent, physical, attempted sexual assault. I was beaten very badly. Now, I didn't have a family member murdered, but I certainly wanted to see the perpetrator of the crime against me brought to justice and punished. And I think when you talk to different victims' families, people kind of come in all over the board on this. Some families do want to see those executions followed through. Others don't. And so I think these questions of, is the manner in which that we're executing people, is it cruel and unusual? Is it actually deterring these things? Those are really important questions for us to engage with as a society. Jim, where do you, I'm assuming you think that in certain circumstances, the death penalty is appropriate.
Yes.
Yep. And do you think that it should be, if I can just ask one little follow-up, do you think it should be carried out regardless of how cruel or unusual the manner of execution is? Like if there was some like magic test that we could do and it was like, oh, this is clearly cruel and unusual, or it's clearly not cruel and unusual, do you think it's okay for us to be killing people if it's causing them extreme pain?
I guess, I mean, when you take a look at the crimes that they did, if they, you know, if they were a psychological problem with them, I guess I would still say yes, the death penalty should still be used.
So for you, the cruelty of the manner of execution shouldn't really be a factor. So you'd be okay with the electric chair, for example.
I would like to see the most humane way, but I mean, anybody that dies is going to be, you know, is going to be a traumatic experience to their body. If the nitrogen, you know, fills your lungs up because it's heavier than air and it forces your oxygen out and deprives you of it, or if it's, you know, in the olden days, a firing squad or walking the plank. But, you know, I guess we have to take a look at, you know, not to say it's a thing for.
Ballerina, you must have seen her dancing in the sand. Now she's in me.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to a Monday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My apologies to Jim from Wales. We lost you there. If you're on the line, stay there. We will get to you. And if I don't get to my discussion about the ridiculousness of what's happening in Texas, the ridiculousness that is Greg Abbott, the ridiculousness of the Supreme Court not understanding the Supremacy Clause, at least apparently four of them don't understand the Supremacy Clause, and all of this is still yet ever and exclusively all about Donald Trump. If I don't get there today, don't worry. I will do it tomorrow. Because I want to hear from you on the death penalty. 844-967-2789. We've got some texters weighing in. I wanted to share a bit of what folks had to say there. Jim from Appleton, I'm personally categorically opposed to the death penalty, especially coming from a state that has extreme anti-abortion laws on the books. Pro-life, right? Yeah, that's always been a bit of a pickle for me. If you're about protecting life in utero, what about actual living people? What you do to the least of my people, you do to me. Angel from Kenosha, oh my goodness, it would have been more humane to put a pillow over this man's face. We've become animals. Catherine from Madison, Maggie, I'm against capital punishment, but I can't understand why we can't use humane methods to execute people. Any nurse or respiratory therapist can name several quick, painless ways. Indeed. Indeed. Tom from New Berlin weighing in on the tunes. Thanks, Tom. And a new texter from Waukesha, 262. How come the pro-life party is also pro-gun and pro-death penalty and against student lunch programs? The hypocrisy is stunning. The death penalty should be abolished. A lot of variety of viewpoints here, folks. And that's okay. I think this is one of those tough questions. And I think what we were talking to Jim from Wales about is like, does it matter if it is indeed cruel, if it causes extreme and extraordinary pain? And I think his point's fair too, that listen, you're killing somebody, there's going to involve some serious physical interruptions. But again, we have drugs that put people, that render people unconscious. We use them for surgeries all the time. Jack from Merrimack, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you, Jack?
Well, first of all, as a general statement, I'm going to say I'm generally against the death penalty. And there's a very simple reason, and that is we don't always get it right. There have been, I don't know how many hundreds of cases where someone has either been executed or very nearly been executed, all of a sudden exonerating evidence has appeared. Now, having said that, I would say this. In one instance, it might be acceptable, and that is if you find someone that is a serial killer and there is no question about it, and how do you prove that? That's another question entirely. But if there's no question you've got someone that's a serial killer, the only way to make sure that that person will not kill again is to stop them in their tracks. And that is the only case where I would say that the death penalty may be appropriate. Even so, I certainly would agree with the sentiment that there are humane ways to kill someone. And if we can, we can humanely put animals to sleep, we can certainly, and that's the euphemism for euthanizing them. And we can do the same with human beings.
Yeah, I hear you. Can I ask you one quick question? Then I want to hear what else you have to say, Jack. Terrorists, like the Boston Marathon bombers, death penalty?
Well, again, that's the equivalent to a serial killer. It's the person that has killed before and is so convinced that their killing is necessary that they're going to kill again. So that person qualifies as well.
I hear you. I agree. I would assume that this also applies your definition of serial killer to mass shooters.
Yep.
Gotcha. Yep. What else did you want to say, Jack? You had a secondary point.
Well, yeah, the secondary point is, again, so many people that are in favor of the death penalty are so-called pro-life as well. And as you pointed out, if you are truly against the death penalty, that means you better be against a whole bunch of other things, from insurance company death penalty, adjusters that make life and death decisions. You're against wars of choice. You're in favor of health care for all, regardless of job or income, to prevent premature death. You're against attacks on women's clinics. You're against millions of privately owned guns that are responsible for accidental and suicidal deaths. I could go on and on, but you get the picture. There's so much hypocrisy with the so-called right to life people that it just goes on and on.
I really appreciate the sentiments and the thoughtfulness, Jack. Did you have something else?
No, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you listening. Stay safe out there. Joanne from Madison, what do you say?
Thank you so much for taking on this really difficult topic. I was very much alive while we still did not have a death penalty in the United States. In the 70s and all of that, we had no death penalty, and we could hold the beacon of human rights higher internationally because of that. And that's the only, all the wonderful commentary you've been hearing from people, the texters and the callers and all of that, that's something we haven't mentioned yet, that we can't hold ourselves high in terms of human rights and the standards of for human decency across the world if we have such barbaric practices in our own nation. So, again, if you could talk us up at some point about some, let's say, some strategy, whether or not the Supreme Court could listen to some of our arguments, since it has so many Catholics, perhaps with the Pope leaning being very much against the death penalty, perhaps perhaps there are ways that we can open up the conversation again, as it was opened in the 1970s when we didn't have a death penalty. So thank you again for taking on such a wonderfully complex but unsettling topic.
Thank you, Joanne. Always nice to know that you're listening. Be well out there. Yeah, these last couple of callers bringing up some really incredibly important points. Yes, we had basically a moratorium on the death penalty. When the death penalty came back into use after that moratorium in the 70s, this is when you started to see the Supreme Court power grab that I've talked about when we dove deep into the shadow docket. Started back in the 80s. And that's when you start to, that is when the power grab by the Supreme Court started to occur. And here's the secondary point that I want to sort of lean into that Joanne brought up. Most Catholic judges and justices, if asked a question about the incompatibility of their Catholicism with the death penalty, will answer you something like this. Our nation has determined that the death penalty is to be utilized for the most heinous of crimes. Juries decide in most cases, not in Mr. Smith's case that we've talked about here, juries of folks, peers, decide that a person must pay the ultimate price for their most heinous crime. And though my religious beliefs are in opposition to the death penalty as a justice and jurist, as a judge, I am compelled to follow the law of these United States, which are secular, which are a-religious. They will make that argument to you. And so I ask all of us, if that is true in the context of the death penalty, why is it not also true when it comes to the freedom of women and all kinds of people in this country to access the healthcare that they believe is appropriate? All of a sudden, it seems that that line between a person's individual religious beliefs and what a secular democracy has as its systems of laws, all of a sudden, it becomes situationally dependent. That's the thing that challenges me the most. I was raised as a Catholic. And I have what I believe is a consistent viewpoint on both individual rights to access healthcare and the death penalty. But it's that quirk of the question, right? They draw a line when it comes to the death penalty. Well, I might believe this in my private religious life, but I have to follow the law here. But all of a sudden, when it comes to some other topics, gender affirming care, abortion, etc., all of a sudden, a different set of rules seem to apply. Those are the things that cause me such great pause when I look at our judicial system, when I look at many of the nominees of Donald Trump, is that they claim to have consistency of principles. But I just don't think it holds up under much scrutiny. And I'm not going to sit here and tell people what they should think about the death penalty. I'm just not. I've never lost a family member to murder. But I can speak as someone who survived a violent crime that punishment is best when it is meted out with some swiftness. Punishments are best when they actually do potentially serve a deterrent purpose. Neither of those conditions can be met by the death penalty as it is currently applied in the United States. And I think certainly when you start to look at the punishment itself, for those folks that have witnessed, as journalists or otherwise, have witnessed executions, they are horrifying. I don't think it quite does it justice to read words off of a page that Mr. Smith thrashed violently. He was conscious for several minutes after the gas began to blow. flow, excuse me, and then began shaking and writhing, pulling against the restraints of his gurney for many minutes. I don't know. Just, it seems cruel, unusual, inhumane, and beneath the dignity of our country. Mark from Prairie du Sac, how are you, friend?
Doing okay, and sorry to hear about your trauma. I don't imagine you're over in just a short time, like Scott Walker suggested, that what happens in those kind of crimes. That in the first place, on the death penalty, in the first place, as this execution was meted out, it's in violation of our Constitution because it was both cruel and unusual. But the method was untested method, and now apparently the government, Alabama, wants to export this to other states. In 1851, we had a botched execution in the state of Wisconsin where John McCaffrey was hung for murdering his wife, and it took him 20 minutes to die at the end of the rope. And it horrified the state so much that in 1853, we abandoned the death penalty in the state of Wisconsin. When Eddie Slovic was shot by a firing squad for desertion in 1945, it took him 15 minutes to die after he'd been shot. And now this guy was 20 minutes before his body, gave up the ghost. That it is just a horrifying method because this guy was conscious of what was going on when he was being executed the whole time until we don't know at what point in time his brain finally gave out.
Yeah, it doesn't sit right with me. We have to be able to do better. I'm Maggie Dawn. We're going to listen to a few important messages. We're going to come right back here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you'd like to be heard on this, 844-967-2789. Keep it locked, everybody.
Seems just for the best. Pretty eyes. Man, ballerina, you must see
Welcome back, y'all. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Hello, Talker Green Bay, WGBW, all across the northeastern Wisconsin region, listening on 97.9 FM and 1590 AM. Remember, you can go get that app, listen to us anywhere you are on this rock called Earth. We've been talking about the death penalty, heavy stuff for a Monday. I know. Because I don't think anybody's mentioned it yet, I can't let this conversation end without saying this. The death penalty is racist. If you look at any of the analyses of the demographics of who is sentenced to death and the sorts of crimes, you are far more likely to be sentenced to die if you are a black man. Period. And that someone's race factors into that should immediately draw into suspicion the propriety of that as punishment. The other fact I want to mention is that of the executions that have taken place in the last, say, nearly decade, the number's gone down considerably on an annual basis. It's usually somewhere south of 30. But those 30 or less executions on an annual basis are concentrated in just a few states. And you can probably guess which states they are. And indeed, as Mark from Prairie du Sac mentioned, Alabama is just setting the table for the nitrogen gas asphyxiation as death penalty tactic. believe Mississippi and Oklahoma also looking to use nitrogen gas asphyxiation. Jim from Appleton, humanely kill someone, bring back the guillotine. Fast, physically painless, messy, but a better form of execution has never been devised. One of our other new texters saying it costs more to sentence someone to death than to imprison them for life. Yep, because of all the appeals. It's a much, much, much more expensive process from a taxpayer dollar perspective. Rico, my friend, you are on the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you this afternoon?
Hey, how you doing, Maggie?
I'm good,
hon. I cannot agree with you. 110%, Maggie. If you look back at almost all the Supreme Court decisions handed down throughout our history, they are definitely racist at their roots. Look at Terry v. Ohio. Look at the Mems case. Look at everything. It's always, always been about racism, but it has come full tilt, 360 degrees around, and now it affects all of us. Thank you, Maggie, for everything you do. I seriously mean that.
Thanks, Rico. I appreciate you listening. Appreciate you calling. Be safe out there, my friend. I could try to pivot to something lighter for the remainder of the show, but I'm not going to do that just because it's the tone would be a little bit off, in my opinion. And I just want to return us to some fundamental first principles. We have to ask ourselves, what is the purpose of the execution? And I think retribution and punishment is really critical. And at a minimum, should we not be talking to the victims' families? Should they not have a say? I mean, that's what Marcy's Law is at least hypothetically about here in the state of Wisconsin. One wonders if it's actually achieving that goal. But it's to give victims a say in the criminal justice process. Now, having been the victim of a violent crime when I was living abroad, my attack occurred when I was living in Denmark. I can tell you that that process was infinitely more respectful of my feelings and experiences and where I was mentally than the other time I was the victim of a crime in the United States and had to go through that ordeal. We often basically re-victimize people in the United States. Part of it is the length of time that it takes to get to full adjudication. But often it is the process itself. Now, let me tell you what it was like in Denmark very briefly. It was a panel of three judges, and they decided, no jury, panel of three judges. They decided whether or not the person was guilty or innocent, and they also decided in one case, in one legal proceeding, if the man who victimized me or who attempted to victimize me, because I am a survivor, if he owes me monetary damages. So they combined the civil and the criminal into one proceeding. They flew me back over there. They paid for me to fly back over there. And when there was a small monetary award for my violent attempted sexual assault, I think it was like $5,000. Guess who paid it? The guy didn't have the money. The government of Denmark paid that to me. And then they seek to effectively garnish this man's wages for as long as it takes for him to pay the government back. That's kind of interesting, isn't it? Much more efficient. From the date of the attack until the conclusion of the legal proceeding and the imprisonment of my attacker was less than a year. Think about that. Justice delayed is justice denied. And the last observation I want to make, and the reason that I wanted to talk about immigration and the death penalty together, is that what is going on in Texas and how we approach immigration in this country does result in life or death decisions for people. And if we are to care for the least of our people, We need to be judged by how we treat convicted felons and those seeking to enter into our country. And the political posturing going on right now is unacceptable, because it is clear that Republicans are not concerned or worried about an actual immigration solution. They want to simply bow at the altar of Donald Trump. I'll hit it all tomorrow on The Maggie Dawn Show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Take care of each other. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. It's always better when we stand together.